Today is Wednesday, March 14th. This is the Women's Chumash here, and we are beginning Perek Tet Zayin. Okay, Rabotai. We are up to the beginning of Perek Tet Zayin of Sefer Bereishis. But I have to ask your opinion about something.
Skip over the words. What about all
that? There are some individuals in the shul, men, who have retired recently, and they said their wives or their wives' friends said, I go to a Chumash class, Rabbi Adler, and it's really good. So they want to know if they can attend.
No.
So I said the following. I said, my own experience, I have no problem teaching men and women together. But my own experience is that any time a man attends a shir with women, women are generally reluctant to say anything because they feel they don't have the background and it'll look silly. So, for example, the Monday night Gemara shir is mixed. And Nechama, I didn't want to say you, but I said the two women who were there never open up their mouth. I understand. And here, where it's only women, you're a very active participant. And that's my feeling. So that's why this year has been typically separate. And the women's Mishnah, Gemara share Wednesday night is also deliberately separate. I'm just saying, I would convey your say, and just get an idea. Yeah, what do you want to say? Yeah. No. Yeah.
If they don't come, they listen to it online.
What?
That's true.
That is true. Yeah. Yes.
There are
such opportunities in the community.
Right.
At Petakora there is. But here they specifically wanted to know, the members of
the
Yeah, I understand. Okay. So, yes.
And a lot of times we bring up things that only women would understand, that I think no one would open their mouth if a woman would hear that.
Okay, I hear what you're saying, and in all probability it will remain just the way it is. Okay. We're up to Bereshit Perek Tet Zayin. So the Torah states, we have completed studying, analyzing the covenant that HaKadosh Baruch Hu made with Avram. And now the Torah reports, V'sarai Eshet Avram, Lo Yalda Lo, she did not have any children. Vila Shifcha Mitzrit Ushma Hagar. She had a maidservant by the name of Hagar. Vatomer Sarai El Avram. Hineina Atzorani Hashem Miledet. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has precluded me from giving birth. Bona El Shifchati. Please get married to my servant. Ulai ibane mimena. Perhaps I will be able to build a family through her. Vayishma Avram likol Sarai. And Avram listened to Sarai's wife. Vatikach Sarai eshet Avram et Hagar hamitzrit shivchata. Sarai, the wife of Avram, takes Hagar the Egyptian, her servant, miket eser shanim l'shevet Avram be'eretz Kanaan. After 10 years of Avram living together with Sarai in Eretz Canaan, Vatitain Ota Le Avram Le Isha Vat Vatigacha le Avram isha lo li isha. She gave Avram, her husband, this woman as a wife unto Avram. Very nice. So we'll start as we do with Rashi, and then try to focus on two major issues that emerge from these three psukim that we just read. One is the halacha that draws support from these psukim about women who are married and don't have children. What happens under those circumstances? So we'll see, there will be a debate, a machloek between the Ramban and virtually everybody else. What might be the unique position that this particular Shivcha had, Hagar, by virtue of the fact that she was a Mitzrit? Is there any significance to that? So let's take a look at Rashi. As we always do, we'll start first. Rashi says, Shivcha Mitzrit. Says Rashi in the name of the Midrash, Bat Paro Hayta. She was the daughter of Paro. How does Paro suddenly get into the equation?
Why would she be a servant?
Kishira'a nisim shina'asu lisara. When Paro noticed the miracles that occurred unto Sarah at the beginning of Parshas Lech Lecha, when he had taken Sarah and he developed some type of Sarat, some type of leprosy, recognized that she had divine protection and he could not violate her at all, he said, Amar, Mutav Shetehe Biti, Shifcha Babayit Zeh, it would be far preferred for this woman to be a Shifcha in this family, Velo Givira Babayit Acher, and not a mistress, the head of a household in another household. That's what Rashi says in the name of the Medrash. Now, what do you think offers support for this particular... What do you think offers support for this particular Medrash? It seems a little far-fetched, but... what might indicate some degree of support?
Why does it have to say she?
What? Yes.
Why
is it so important to let us know that she was Egyptian? And why would Avram suddenly have an opportunity or an interest necessarily to purchase specifically Shifcha women from where? From Egypt. He didn't have a very positive experience in Egypt, so what would lead him necessarily? So perhaps that's what's leading the Midrash to tell us that she was Bat Paro, which leads us to something startling, that two daughters of Paro have had enormous roles in the development of Am Yisrael to some extent, even though the child born to Hagar was Yishmael, but nonetheless, we'll see how some interpret this in relationship to Sarah, and of course, the daughter of Paro at the time of the Yamsuf. Yes?
I thought, it might be Midrash, that the daughter of Bat Paro later on was Dinah.
What?
That was Dinah. The daughter of Bat Paro was Elisha, and it was actually Dinah who had the whole issue with Shechet.
That's another Medrash.
Okay.
But this is not the Medrash that is involved in that. So, it's just... yes?
Could the Midrash be saying there was a quid pro quo that Paro monkeyed around with Avram's woman, so he needed to offer a woman in compensation?
Okay, that's possible. I just don't think that Avram, based on the character description, would be willing to accept that offer.
Like a Sarah for Sarah. Right?
Yeah, right. I know, but I just don't get the picture that has been drummed into me since the second grade about who Avram was. Doesn't seem that he'd take a woman as an exchange for his wife. it would belittle Sarah to do so. You know, you were attacked, I'm going to take somebody else. It's
not but it's the initiative.
Right, but the Paro offered. It's an interesting idea. Okay.
So he left with the last.
Okay, time. But not his daughter. It says Avodim Ushpachot. Yes, that I believe. That is not hard to believe. But that Paro should initiate this based on this statement. It would be better for my daughter to be a slave in this household than to be the head of another household. It's just saying, okay, it's not, you know, the worst thing we've heard in the name of the Medrash. Right. But that's what Rashi says. Let's just continue with Rashi for a second. So Sarai said to herself, Ulai ibane mimena, perhaps I will build through her. So limeid, this teaches us, al mi she'eino banim, that somebody who unfortunately does not have children, she'eino banui elaharus, that person can never feel totally built up, but feels to some extent as if she is in a state of destruction. And therefore it says, Ibane mimena. Continues Rashi, Bizichut she'achnit, Achnis tsarati l'toch beiti, on account of the fact that I am willing to bring my tsara. In Tanakh and in the Gemara, it's usually more in the Gemara, a second wife taken into any family is called a tsara. What? Yeah, the person who's going to generate pain, agony, and a crisis. That's the way the Gemara always refers to a second wife, as her tsara. But she says, does Sarai, that perhaps if I am willing to suffer the agony of having competition in my house, perhaps what will happen? I will merit having my own child in this merit that I offered my husband, Avram, the opportunity to have a child. Perhaps this merit itself, that I am willing to suffer having competition in the house, would be the merit that HaKadosh Baruch Hu would see, would tip the scale and enable her to have children. Kacha lomed Rashi.
It's such an interesting word, Ibane Mimena. But I'm thinking that, I know this from personal experience, that people adopt a child and become pregnant.
Okay, that's exactly...
There's something about that comfort.
Correct. That's what Sparno is going to say. Nothing to do with merits, but perhaps if the pressure in the family is relieved, how will the pressure be relieved? By the fact that Avram might succeed in having a child with her, with Hagar, then maybe, it's as if suggesting that he's a little too uptight, and like this will enable him to relax a little. And as you said, it happens very frequently where somebody doesn't have a child, adopts, and then they have one or even several children of their own because, again, some of the tension has been taken away. Yes?
It bothers me that, we've been studying and that Avram was promised by God that he was going to have children, they were going to have children. How could they just...
Excellent point! Now I'm going to thrust the challenge upon you, and you'll anticipate what many of the Parshanim were going to say right now. Nowhere does it ever say that the mother of Avram's child is going to be Sarai. It just says that what? Ki lecha ulizaracha etena ta'aretz hazot. That's all it says. That I'm going to make your children kichofei hashamayim or kechol al shvatayam. That's all it says. It never identifies the mother. And therefore, the only thing that was ever guaranteed by the covenant, which we just studied, was the fact that Avram ultimately will father children. But it does not necessarily guarantee that Sarai is the mother of those children. And hence, that's why she's willing to make this concession at this particular time. It was not Avram's initiative, and we're going to discuss his reaction in just a second. But it's a good point. Yeah. No, she was going to raise him. She was going to raise him, yes. No doubt.
Did this have any implication, you know, that Ishmael became head of, you know, the Arab, you know, and now...
Well, this particular parak ultimately will unfold with the birth of Ishmael, and then the debate between Avram and Sarai, whether or not this child should stay in the house. As you well know, Sarah said, Garesh, throw him out. And Avram was reluctant to do so. Vayera hadavar be'enei Avraham. And God has to come and tell him, listen to your wife. That's what God has to come and tell him. Kol asher tomar eileh Sarah, shma bekola. Just listen to her. She's right this time. And every time. You all know that. So the question is a very good question. So let's take a look at some of the comments that are made by the Parshanim on it, and two or three interesting midrashic and halachic sources as well. So take a look, starting at page 1, towards the bottom of the right-hand side, you have Chizkuni. V'sarai eshet Avram lo yalda. Mikra ze ba lehodienu. You're welcome. Mikra ze ba lehodienu shehabirit kadma lezera. What does that mean? The covenant with HaKadosh Baruch Hu made concerning the land was issued before any child was even born. Shelo tomar ein mukdam umeuchar. Do not employ that which I and many of my colleagues do all the time. There is no chronological order. In which case I could say, if I wanted to use that interpretation here, in the context of these two parshiyot, what would I say? That Avram already had a child, maybe multiple children, we have no idea, and then God comes and says, Lizaracha, to these children who are right here, etainet aretz hazot. Says Chizkuni, absolutely not. Why does the Torah record this event right after the covenant, the Brit? Because it wants to let you know that the order is intact. That it's much more of a wonder that God makes a promise that I will give your children X number of lands when you don't even have a child, than had children already been born, and now he just tells you, you see these kids, they're going to inherit X, Y, and Z. Especially that they were getting an advanced age, and Sarai's going to notice that she's getting already much older. And as a result, therefore, do not say that. Lekach ne'emar v'sarai eshet Avram lo yalda. She did not have any children unto him. No children whatsoever. So the purpose of stating this right here and adjoining it to the covenant is to let you know that these two psukim, these two stories, happened in their proper logical order, do not be tempted to employ Ein Mukdam U'Mu'uchar Batorah. That's point number one. Point number two, says Chizkuni, Vila Shivchat Mitzrit, Shivchat Milug Haita, V'haya Chayav B'mizonoteha, V'lo Haya Rishai. Just switch it over to page 2 for a second. Limochra. Here, Chiskuni introduces a very well-known halakha discussed often in the Gemara in Masechet Ketubot. Assets that a wife brings unto the marriage. She comes in with certain assets. Does the husband gain control of those assets or not? So, the halacha states that on account of the fact that a husband is obligated to feed his wife, all of her earnings during the marriage technically belong to her husband. Ma'ase yadeha, anything that she earns technically belongs to the husband. She has a right to say, and many women say that today, eini nizonet ve'eini ose. Don't give me food. I'm making five times as much as you. I can afford my own food. You don't have to feed me. I can provide myself. And then she can tell the husband, all of my earnings I put into my bank account, not to the joint bank account. That is her right. But assets that she brings in belong to her, but they are identified as nichsei milug. Nichsei milug, the husband has a right to the fruits. If it was a tree, for example, she had a field, and it was a fruit-bearing tree, the husband has a right to the fruit as long as they are married, but he cannot sell the property itself. A slave, in halachic terms, is another asset. So he can use the slave to engage her to produce some work in the house, but he is not permitted to sell her to anybody else. Selling her depends on the wife. So Chizkuni claims that the word vila shivcha mitzvah, vila, to her was this shivcha, that it belonged to her legally, now that what? They are married. Under those circumstances, he, Avram, can use the fruits of her labor, but he has no right to sell her off. So if this had been Avram wanting to give this Hagar to some other man as a wife, he couldn't do so. But as being the owner of the property, and Hagar is defined as property, Sarah, who is the owner, has a right to give her away unto Avram as a wife. And then her status will change. She will no longer... That is correct. Correct. If you remember Shmot chapter 21, which deals with slavery, Jewish slavery, Eved Ivri and Ama Ivriya, the Torah always tries to terminate a woman's slavery as quickly as possible. It is considered an anathema to the Torah, and the Torah is not happy about it. As to why it allows it in the first place is a separate discussion. But it's not particularly happy with it. And therefore the Torah says, the master should marry her off. Or, v'im libno yiyodena, ask his son to marry this shivcha. Because once you marry, you terminate the status of a slave. And that's what the Torah ultimately wants. Does not want to have slaves. So here, that's what would happen. Hagar would now terminate her status as a slave, and under those circumstances, she is now Avram's wife. And that's why she has to ask Avram to send her away. Remember later on, who makes the initial request? Hagar. Right, I mean Sarah about Hagar. Garesh, she tells Avram, send them away. Now, why doesn't she send away herself? Because once she married Avram, she's no longer her slave any longer. She is Avram's wife. And a wife can't be sent away by anybody. And if he will send away, it's up to him to divorce her and then ask her to leave. Ask her to leave. So that's a second aspect that Chizkuni brings, that her status was of shivchat milug. It's called in the Talmud nichsei milug. Nichsei milug. Yeah.
They got married. They didn't just live together.
That is correct.
Alice didn't have a baby.
They, who?
She will.
Hoga will have a baby very soon. Very soon. Yes. Good. Take a look at... Where is this? Yeah. Take a look for a second at page number two, number three, for a second. So this is the Gemara that cites our pasuk to establish the halacha. It's a Gemara in Masechet Yevamot. Tanu Rabbanan. Nasa Isha. If somebody married someone, Vishaha Ima Eser Shanim Velo Yilada. A woman was married for 10 years and did not give birth. Yotzi V'yitain Ketubah. He should divorce her and pay her ketubah. Shema lo zacha lihi banot mimena. Perhaps he was not worthy of having a child through her. Afal pi she'ein ra'aya l'davar. Even though there is no concrete proof that this is the halacha, zecher l'davar. There is a remez, a hint to it in the Torah. What does it say? Miketz eser shanim la shevet Avram be'eretz Canaan. After 10 years of living in Eretz Canaan, then what does Hagar do? Hagar decides to what? Sarai offers Hagar. Now, the Gemara makes a comment which the Ramban doesn't like. Lelamdecha she'ein yeshivat chutz la'aretz ole lo min haminyan. The pasuk says that when did this event take place? Miketz eser shanim, where? Be'eretz Kena'an. So they were married many more years than 10 years, but they lived part of their life in chutz la'aretz. Avram was in Mitzrayim. He was with the Plishtim. He lived in a variety of other places. He lived in Ur Kasdim. He lived in Haran. None of those years count towards the clock of 10 years. Why? Because it is possible that they have not exhausted all avenues of trying to have a child. What do I mean? If you were to live in Israel, that zechut alone might be the merit that would take you over the hump and grant you a child. Since they were living in chutz la'aretz, that those years do not count towards the clock. So too, lefikach chalahu o shechol sahi, if he was sick or she was sick, Oshnehem chavushim bebeito asurim, they were imprisoned and couldn't live together as husband and wife. Ein olin lo min haminyan. Those years don't count. Don't count. Now, it's interesting in Shulchan Aruch, the debate between Karo, the author of the Sephardic, which is the Shulchan Aruch, and the Rambam. Karo follows Rambam, who writes that the Gemara's suggestion here is an obligation. You must acquire another woman. Well, if you must acquire another woman, for Rambam that wasn't such a difficult statement to make, because Sfardim never accepted the Cheirum of Rabbeinu Gershom against polygamy. You could and should, according to Rambam, must take another wife and try to have children with that second wife after 10 years of marriage. However, the Rama writes, Ve'ein anu nohagin kein bimdino seinu. We do not That's not our custom in our countries, in all of Europe, in Western Eastern Europe. We don't do so, says Rama. And since we're under the ban of Rabbeinu Gershom, from a practical point, there's nothing you can do. You can, if you would like, divorce her, but you're not obligated to do so. And the Rama writes, it's not our custom to even to suggest to divorce her. And that's, if you'll think about it, there were great, great scholars and rabbeim who were married for 50 years and they made no attempt to divorce one wife, Lubavitcher Rebbe, the Satmar Rebbe, never had any children. And there were many other such cases as well. And in fact, somebody wrote Rav Moshe a question. How come, he said, the Admor Mechabad didn't follow this particular rule? So Rav Moshe wrote, because the Rama said, we don't have to do it today. That's why he did it. And I give them a lot of credit for not doing it, because sometimes when you have that type of power and leadership, you want to keep it in your family. So it might have entertained their minds to divorce this wife, marry somebody else, in order to have children to allow the dynasty to continue. But they didn't. But Rambam says this is an obligation. The Rama writes it's just a reshus, and it's not our practice to do so at all. Not our practice to do so at all. That's what the Gemara says. Yes.
Does it make a difference if it is the husband's,
Excellent question. Excellent question. So I want you to think, or you don't have to think. Okay, I didn't mean that way. Open up to the beginning of Parshat Toldot, and I want you to ask the Gemara's next question. Open up to the beginning of Parshat Toldot. That is, at the end of chapter 25 of Sefer. Is that beginning of what parak is that? Parak Yutet? No. Kafei. That's what I said. 25. Parak Kafei, and read to yourself till Yaakov and Esav are born. Read to yourself and ask the Gemara's next question. And then, Vivi, the answer will come about. You'll get the Gemara's answer too.
20 years.
Yes. Yitzchak, we are told, was 40 years old when he got married to Rivka. And when did he give birth to children?
60.
He was 60.
20 years.
Why did he wait 20 years? Why didn't he do something after 10 years? What? So the Gemara will answer, because Yitzchak, I have no idea how, figured out that he was the problem. And therefore, it says, Vayetar Yitzchak Linochach Ishto. Not with her, not towards her, but opposite his wife. Why? That's what the Gemara is going to answer. Because he turned away from her not to create the impression that it might have been her fault. He somehow knew that up until now, it was his fault. So what am I going to help? What's going to be accomplished by divorcing Rivka and marrying somebody else? It's my fault. I can't have any children. And indeed, today, where we can ascertain at a much quicker rate who might be at fault, so some say that the halacha changes even earlier than the 10 years. That if it's been determined that unfortunately the wife cannot have children, under those circumstances, the husband, should he have been a Rambam fan, he would go ahead and take another wife after 3 years. Not just wait till 10 years, because we already know what the source of the problem is. And according to the Rama, he had the option of divorcing his wife and marrying somebody else if he wanted to fulfill the mitzvah of having children. Because today we know, yes.
So if you know before you're married that you're unable to bear children, are you not allowed then to get married? And in halakha?
You are permitted to marry someone who already has children. Then there's no, if he had children already, he fulfilled his mitzvah. Again, I acknowledge from right out, it's difficult to understand why the mitzvah of having children is on the male. It's very, very difficult to understand. I know where we learn it out from, but it's very difficult to comprehend. Yeah.
If a man was supposed to divorce his wife, what was the wife supposed to do? She doesn't inherit the land. She doesn't inherit land. So what does she do?
That's a very good question. That's an excellent question. So what she would do is she would take her money of the ketubah, that's number one, and then look for a man who already had children who would be willing to marry her. Yeah. I'm saying it, it sounds a little, it is a little cruel.
Okay.
Yes.
The term akara just means that she has no children. It doesn't indicate that it's her fault, like barren.
That is correct. That's actually a debate. We'll get to that pasuk. To Vatihi Rivka Akara, what does that mean? Just means factually, or does it mean that she indeed was barren and couldn't have children? We'll see. That's a very good question. Excellent question.
Is that still the halakha?
In our community, we do not do it. I'm not saying it's never done, but it's not obligatory, and the general practice is to adopt. That's what we would encourage in those circumstances. Encourage somebody to adopt. And when you raise a child, it's ki'ilu yoldo. It's as if you have given birth to them. Yes?
Does any of the farsh give the observation that you haven't moved to Israel in only 10 years?
Yeah. No, the Ramban will allude to it and say that if you're looking to have a child, you should exhaust all avenues. And since living in Israel is a trigger, yes, that should be the reason to make aliyah. Yes. Yes.
Given in Israel, like a lot of medical developments that have occurred in the last many decades, would that mitigate the force of any of this halakhic imperative of divorcing, not divorcing? I mean, well, many of these situations probably could have been remedied by medical intervention, which would render it moot.
There is no doubt. That's why today, you know, we have, there are other methods of conceiving other than through having marital relations and, you know, things not going well. Yes. And we can try almost everything. Almost everything. Of course, that led to a whole series of other questions. How to define the mother? Is it the mother who provided the egg, or is the mother, and that's what we've switched to. It has been a change in halachic thinking. It used to be the mother who carried the child was most often identified as the mother. And now we're moving away from that.
Well, what about the father? Who's the father?
Okay, whoever's sperm it is the father.
So then the obligation wasn't met.
What?
If it was from another donor.
That is correct.
And didn't meet his obligation.
That is correct, but at least the wife would have a capacity if she carried the baby, let's say, with someone else's sperm. Yes, in vitro fertilization. Yes. Yeah.
Ruth, you said only
applies to the
man.
Yeah, the woman gets an assist. So, like in hockey, she gets an assist. But the goal is scored by the husband. Yeah. Yeah, let's take a look. I want to continue. So that's what the Gemara says. The Gemara, yeah. Yes. Okay. Take a look at on page one again. Take a look at Radak on the left-hand side of the page. Bisarai eshet Avram lo yolda lo. Kimosha Amar vatihi Sarai akara. The pasuk actually states that Sarai was barren. Ratzono lomar kevan shiro asa Sarai she lo yolda li Avraham. Once Sarai noticed that she had not helped Avram give birth to a child. Vehu ben shmonim v'chamesh, he's already 85. Vehi bat 75, and she was 75, chashva ki ein la tikva od, that there is no hope any longer. Amra, right? Amra, ki hi ha'el amar la Avraham, she yitain lo zera, she yirash ha'aretz. God did promise that his children, Avram's children, will inherit the land. Umimeni lo yeh lo zera od. But I'm not going to be the one to mother these child. Why? Ki ani zikena. I'm way above capacity of having a child. Vahabein shiyeh lo meisha acheret yihyeh lo. This child who will be born to another mother will be granted and credited to him. Tov li she'etein lo shifchati leisha. It would be better for me to give my servant to him. Ulai ibane mimena. V'yihyeli kibni v'tovli. It will actually be considered as my child, and I will feel very gratified. Why will she feel gratified? Because ultimately, who's going to raise this child? She is, not Hagar. That would be better. Meshiyeh lo ben meisha acheret. Had she had a child from somebody else. And then Radak makes a very important point and removes the necessity to introduce the Midrash that Rashi introduced, that it was Paro's daughter. Look at the next two lines of the Radak and tell me why I say you don't need Rashi's Midrash, because he addresses it in a much more compelling fashion. Yes.
Just be assured that it's not a Kanani.
Correct. Because had it been a Kanani, would he allow her in the house? Absolutely not. Says the Radak. You wanted to know why it says Isha that she was a Shibcha Mitzrit. Who cares? Says the Radak. I'll tell you why. Because Avram would never consider allowing a woman of Kanani descent to serve even as a servant in the framework of his house. Where else does Avram register his dislike from where else? Lo sikach isha mibnot kanan libni. I don't want you to take any Canaanite woman for my son. And if you don't find anything there, I relieve you, do not bring back a Canaanite woman. So apparently the morality or lack thereof level of the Canaanite woman was well, and Canaanite community was well established at that particular time. And therefore, if you go to chapter 18 of Sefer Vayikra for just a second and look at Pasuk Gimel, what is that? Correct. That's correct. And in fact, in this pasuk that I'm sending to you, they put Mitzrayim and Kanani on the same level. But at this time, apparently the Kanani was much worse than Mitzrayim. Much worse. So what does the Torah say? Kima'asei, chapter 18, verse 3. Kima'asei eretz Mitzrayim asher yishavtim ba lo ta'asu. Uchima'asei eretz Kanan asher ani mevi etchem shama. Lo ta'asu, uvichukotayam, lo ta'ilecho. So the Torah is fully aware of the culture of the countries, and don't forget, as we learned last week, Kanani is just the code name for what? For all of the children, because all of the children of Canaan are these guys, the Yavusi, the Kani, the Knezi. Those are all those children of Canaan. That's what we learned last week when only five people were here last week. Yeah. So, the Torah is fully aware of it. So Radak here says, I don't need, he's of course aware of Rashi and the Medrash, but he doesn't quote it because I'll peep shot. I can explain it much more compellingly that he refused to take anyone into his house with Kana'ani origins. Much more powerful. Continues the Radak. So in Pasuk Bet, that the first thing, first and second entries, he basically repeats what we just said, what Rashi said and everything else. Now, look at the third one. The caption reads, Vayishma Avram. So the last four words of Pasuk Bet read, Vayishma Avram Lekol Sarai, says the Radak. Lomar Sheyashar Be'enav Hadavar Velohim Timbaze Lidaber Ho'el. What does that mean? He didn't find it necessary to consult with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Should I marry this woman or not? He thought her suggestion had merit. Ki achar shesarai bilta miledet, since Sarai did not have a child, mashi yedu ho'el loseis lozara mehagayia. So he assumed that God's intention was that the promise that he made to him, that he would give birth to a child and grant all of these lands, would have to be through somebody else. It just happens to be Hagar in this particular case. The achar shi yashar hadavar be'enai sarai yashar gam be'enav.
So he had his eye on Hagar already. He was just kind of waiting for Sarai.
That's a possibility. And in fact, many have written that Avram was enamored by Hagar, and that's why after Sarai dies, and the Torah tells us that he married Keturah, so Rashi again pipes up in the name of the Medrash and says, who was Keturah? Hagar again. Hagar again. So many modern scholars try to say that he probably had his eye on her way before this proposal was offered. That's what some say, and don't paint Avram in the most positive fashion ever. But then he continues, Ve'Avram lo hitpaleo al Sarah. He asks the question, why did Avram engage in petition like his son Yitzchak did? He prayed, Kemo shasa Yitzchak. So he asked, O hitpaleo v'lo ne'enet. Maybe he did pray and he wasn't answered. Ki ratza ha'el laharot ba nifla'otav la'avrahat la'ahavat Avraham shetele batishin. Why did God not answer Avraham's prayers? Because he wanted, because of his immense love for Avraham, he wanted to magnify the miracle and let Sarai give birth. Not when she's 75, but when she's 90 years old. Yes.
Every single one of the Avot's wives had trouble conceiving.
Correct.
Is this because Hashem wanted to, show them, give them a miracle? It doesn't.
Okay. So I'm going to read with you in a second. HaKadosh Baruch Hu mit'aveh litfilatan shel tzadikim. A very difficult statement. It's quoted right here in a couple of seconds. That why were all of the Avot wives akarot? Why? Because God is craving for the prayers of the tzaddikim Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov.
Then Rashi says Hashem answered Rivka's prayer.
No, he answered.
He was a tzaddik in Russia.
I know. That's why it says Vayeoser Lo. God only responded to Yitzchak, and Rashi answers Eino Dome Tzadik Ben Rasha LeTzadik Ben Tzadik. That's why he answered Yitzchak's prayers, but didn't answer Rivka's. All of that, I find a little troubling. That God should deny somebody the opportunity of a child in order to what? To demonstrate, because I want to hear your prayers. What does that Kodesh Baruch Hu need our tefillot for? Anybody's tefillot. It would sound, I don't want to say it, but it would sound a little selfish on HaKadosh Baruch Hu's part that you keep a woman in agony for so many years just because you crave, whatever that phrase means, I crave their prayer. I would much rather explain it as we did either last week or 2 weeks ago, stating that the Torah in many places, by way of comparison, says how difficult it is for the avot to have children, and on the other hand, all of the remaining community, they're having lots of children. No problem. When did we say that? Last week. I showed you at the end of the Torah reading of Rosh Hashanah. So look at it again. Look at chapter 22 of Sefer Bereishis, the end of Parshas Vayera. You'll have an example of it.
Why would Avraham assume that having a child at 80, 90, 100, his parents had children much later and they lived much later? So to them, 75 is not as old as they perceive it.
I understand. But God did already say at the end of Sefer Parshas Bereishis that the average is going to be 120. So maybe he thought he's in that particular parsha. Could be. Yes. That is true. It does say that in Parshas Chayisara. Yes. So here at the end of chapter 22, which is the Akedah, which we read on Rosh Hashanah, and I understand why we read on Rosh Hashanah, but where should we have read till Maftir? From Shvi to Maftir. Because that's the whole story of the Akedah. But we don't do that. We read a couple of more psukim. And what does the Torah say? In those that v'hine yolda milka gamhi banim lo nachor achicha. That Nachor, your brother, had lots of kids. Utz, Butz, Kimuel, Kimuel. That's what it says. Those were their names. They had eight children. Why do we read that on Rosh Hashanah? It's because it's the stark contrast. Avram was clamoring for a child, got one child, and what did he have to run the risk? Losing that child on the Akedah. And here his brother, not terribly devout and pious to God, has eight children like nothing. Utz and Butz and Kimuel, this one, and Keser Avicha. It's to show you the contrast, that sometimes it's very, very difficult, and that one should appreciate and recognize that it's not guaranteed. It's not a guarantee. And you have to appreciate every matana from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But it's a good question. It's a good question. Yes. Take a look, for example, at Sfarno on the bottom of page number 1, and he says something that somebody, I forgot who said it, said 45 minutes ago. Hine na atzorani Hashem miledet. God has held me up from having children. Afal pish amar lo seis lecha zera, even though he promised you that you're going to have a child, she tells Avram, ki amro lezaracha etein aretz hazot, lo amar shiye lecha oto azar mimeni. He didn't say that you, Avram, are going to be blessed with a child through me. Ulai ibane mimena. Listen to this. Ulai kinat hayareich te'orer hakoach lepe'ulotav v'yitchazek lahasig zora. Anybody want to take a stab at it? He said, she said, kinat hayareich. Literally it means the jealousy of my thighs. The envy of my thigh. Will what? To orer, will awaken them to what? To do what they're supposed to do. In other words, that if I have another woman in the house and she gives birth, maybe she's thinking maybe it's Avram's fault. And as I said, he'll relax a little, and by giving him an opportunity to have a child, maybe I will become what? The one who will eventually have the child and fulfill the dream that l'cha u'l'zaracha means not only through you, but through me as well. So that idea that if some other child comes into the house, you might be blessed with your own children is something that we all know happens. Well, it might happen to my brother. He adopted a child and then he was fortunate to have two children. And they thought they would never have a child.
That also supports the idea that you mentioned that maybe Abraham had his eye on Hagar before. Maybe Sarah realized that and therefore thought, well, maybe if I can't elicit the desired response here, maybe she can.
Good.
And which I will benefit from ultimately.
That's correct. That's very possible. Very possible. Very possible. Now, just take a look at the Ramban on page 1 for a second. I'll have to continue this next week, some of the Midrashic remarks. Vayishma Avram l'kol Sarai. Lo amar hakatuv vaya'as kein. The Torah could have just said, Sarai says, please do this, and he did it. Vaya'as kein. No. The Torah emphasizes, Vayishma Avram l'kol Sarai. Aval Amar Kishama Lekol Sarai. Yirmoz, this gives us a hint, Ki Afal Pi Sheavram Mit Ave Meod Libanim. Even though Avram was lusting for a child, Lo Asa Kain Below Rishut Sarai. He could have thought of this possibility of what? Of bringing in another wife, Hagar or someone else. He could have been thinking about this for years. But he never even broached the subject until what? Until she brought it up herself. Ki v'gamata lo nitkaven shiyibanehu mehagar v'yezaro mimena. His intention was not to what? Build a family through Hagar. Aval kol kavanato la'asot ritzon sara shetibane mimena shiye lo nachat ruach bivnei shifchata ozechut shetizke hi libanim ba'avur kein kedivrei rabbeinu. That perhaps by her taking the initiative and offering Hagar, that might have been the merit that she accrued, which now HaKadosh Baruch Hu will say, you know what, I'm going to grant you a child. So the emphasis here is saying that the only reason that Avram does this is because he's listening to Sarai. Listening to Sarai. And one of the sources that I will quote to you, a very powerful long medrash, is not always are women's suggestions to the advantage of a husband. They compare Adam and Chava with... Now, Adam also listened to his wife, and that didn't turn out very well. So there's a medrash that will elaborate on that and say, you know, don't jump right away and say that every time you listen to your wife. It may not be the best thing. We'll see. And there's a whole comparison. We'll stop here and continue next of up. Next week, I'll do something, what?
You can do Haggadah Torah.
Yeah, I can do Haggadah Torah next week, yes. Sure? Yes. Next week will be the last one before Yantar.
Thank you.
Welcome. And think, next Thursday night, I'm giving the share also for the Thursday, like the Thursday night share, yeah. Because that's when the Chumash class is. So Howie asked me. So.
I'm going to Israel.
Oh, great.